Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to New Books in Fantasy and Adventure, a podcast channel in the New Books Network. This is your host, Gabrielle Matthew, author of the historical fantasy Falcon series and Girl of Fire, the first in an epic fantasy series. My March interview is with Carrie Vaughn, author of The Immortal Conquistador, a tie-in novel for her urban fantasy series based on Kitty the Werewolf. The Immortal Conquistador is a vampire origin story of Kitty's famed ally, Rick, and his sudden turn to darkness in the 17th century. More than 500 years before his friendship with Kitty, noble Ricardo de Avila's life met a fate-changing twist, and his morally complex, blood-soaked existence as an immortal began. Before I welcome Carrie on the show, I'd like to do a short reading from her novel. This is the series, the part called El Conquistador del Tiempo. For the first time in 500 years, Rick stepped into a church. A real, actual church-looking church with stone walls, stained glass windows, carved wood statues of Mary and Joseph, cracked and age-darkened paintings of St. Sebastian full of arrows, St. Augustine writing his book, Daniel in the Den of Lions, a bearded man walking on water, but no crosses. Vaulted ceilings arched overhead. The heart was meant to rise up, the soul filling the space as it contemplated heaven. Rick imagined that what was left of his heart and soul did so. Even though this place was underground, the stained glass windows dark, muted as a cave. He inhaled to find the air rich with stone, wax, incense, and the breath of centuries. He didn't know the name of this church, when it had been built, why it was now buried and hidden under the Vatican, when it had been deconsecrated to allow him and his kind to enter. He was too lost in the wonder of the moment to ask. He had never thought to return to Europe at all, and now he had seen Rome and had finally come to this ancient cathedral full of secrets. The abbot is this way. The somberly dressed young woman who had guided him down the aisle gestured ahead to the transept, waiting patiently while Rick's step slowed and his gaze traveled up and around. Young, she was at least a century old. Thank you, he murmured, and she left him to continue on his own. Her shoes clicked on the stone, and she disappeared into the darkness at the front of the nave. The transept choir and apse had been made into a library, shelves filled with books, thousands of books, with ladders to climb to the highest of them. Scrolls filled racks, folios rested on lecterns, lying open to parchment pages only slightly yellowed with age and otherwise pristine. As in any useful library, there were desks, tables, chairs arranged for study. enough for dozens of scholars to work here. And Rick could almost hear the rustle of turning pages, soft whispers echoing, pen scratching. A wondrous space. Now, though, only two people were present. The curved apse was screened off to make a sort of office, lit with shaded electric lights, which seemed incongruous. The place ought to be filled with candles. Rick came to the screen, cautiously looked to the other side. Here sat a large brown man in an enveloping monastic robe, cowl thrown back, rope belt tied loosely. His chair was upholstered in leather, padded, worn, and patched many times. He did not rise, but sat at the edge, hands steepled, and intently watched Rick's arrival. He was a vampire, chilled, without a heartbeat, no telling how old. "Come forward, my son," he said. So after the reading, I'm going to welcome Carrie on the show. Hi, Carrie, and welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So we're going to jump right into questions about Rick. Rick Davila is a character from your famous Kitty Norville series, which is urban fantasy involving a werewolf who runs a call-in radio show. What makes Rick a character that you wanted to write an entire book about?
Well, Rick is a vampire, because it turns out when you write about werewolves and other supernatural things, vampires somehow weave their way into the story, whether you kind of intended it or not. I didn't originally, I'm not a big fan of vampires, or so I thought, but then Rick showed up, and I kind of dropped this line about his backstory, being part of Coronado's expedition in colonial Spain. And at that point, he has 500 years of history. And I love history. I love this region. And I decided I needed to fill in that backstory. So I suddenly started writing more and more stories about Rick. And it turned out to be enough to fill a book.
Okay. So that's a little how the book came to be. And the book begins, or kind of the way into all of Rick Arius' stories, is he travels to Rome to meet with the abbot of St. Lazarus of the Shadows. And that's where he tells his story. Tell us a little bit about this mysterious order.
A lot of these details tie into things that happened in the Kitty series. And one of the things that happened, the book that covers a lot of this is Kitty Rocks the House, is they meet a priest who says he's from this mysterious order of vampire priests, which sounds like such a contradiction that, you know, Kitty and Rick and the other characters are just immediately intrigued by this, especially Rick. You know, Rick comes from 16th century Spain, essentially. So, you know, very steeped in that Catholic backstory. So the idea of a vampire priest is very intriguing to him. So that's how he gets wrapped up into this. And he finds out that, yes, that for hundreds of years, the Vatican has sponsored this order of holy vampires, or, you know, vampires who are trying to do good work and working for the Vatican in battling some evil vampires that are out there trying to take over the world. That was kind of one of the fun things about working on the Immortal Conquistador is kind of dropping these Easter eggs and tying it into the Kitty series, having it stand alone, but also having it be something that fans of the series can get just a lot more background on, little details from there.
Yes, you say that Rick is intrigued when he meets a vampire priest, and reading the different stories about Rick, we definitely get the feeling that he's religious and God has an important place in this life. My question to you is, does he or did he at one point feel abandoned by God once he becomes, as he calls himself, a cursed creature?
That is part of, that is such a good question, because I feel like that's part of what's driving Rick's character through the centuries. That's one of the questions that sort of keeps him going, is he's continually being told that he's been abandoned by God and he's cursed and he's not holy and he's damned. Other characters are telling him that kind of constantly, over the centuries. but he doesn't believe it. He doesn't feel that himself. He sort of clings to the idea that if he can do good, if he does good works, you know, if he still believes that, that God has not abandoned him, then he can be both, you know, this cursed vampire creature and, you know, still be religious. You know, he's, you know, his whole driving thing in life is how to reconcile that contradiction, despite the fact that everybody around him is telling him it's impossible. And that, you know, religion is such a fraught question anyway. And he's just been a great character to kind of examine some of those issues about personal faith versus the external you know, religion.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
I found it touching. Sometimes he can't go in a church that has a crucifix because he's a vampire, but he lingers as close as he can get to the church.
Yeah. The music, you know, I think there's that one scene in one of the stories where he's listening to the choir outside of the church. And, you know, as someone who loves music myself, that connection that, you know, he can't go in, but he can still hear it and he can still participate that way was a really powerful image for me.
Mm-hmm. The sound travels. Well, in the segment named Conquistador de la Noche, it opens after Rick's arrival to America in the 16th century. Rick is invited to visit a remote village by an old acquaintance. He tells him there are riches for the taking. When Rick arrives, the village is empty, and he's met by a spooky friar in a church without a cross. Clearly, something is amiss. I did wonder about the significance of the houses being shoddily built. That's alluded to several times, and they have cracks in them, and the whole place is empty. It almost reminded me of a stage set. Can you give us more background about why the village would look that way?
Well, I think because the village wasn't built with any intention to actually shelter people. You know, referring to it as a stage set is, you know, pretty apt because I think, you know, the evil vampire who is in charge there, who ends up capturing Rick and transforming Rick into a vampire. Spoilers, everybody. He sort of established this church there as a front. You know, he's pretending to be, you know, this missionary who goes out and builds this church and is supposed to be, you know, tending to the villagers and converting, you know, the indigenous people there. But of course, it's all just a front because he doesn't intend on helping anybody. He doesn't intend on being any kind of a missionary or doing any of the work that, you know, you'd expect from somebody in that situation. So, yeah, it is a front. You know, the church isn't intended to be a church. The village is not intended to be a village. It's all, you know, for the benefit of people who might, you know, just be passing by. So it's not, you know, it's indicative of the kind of facade of, you know, like a lot of vampires, you know, they put on this front so that they can attract people that they can then control, and prey on.
Exactly. Vampires seem to have a need to aggregate people and lesser vampires under them. And that's explored in a segment called El Conquistador del Tiempo. That's where Rick spends some time in Denver. And readers have learned, as I did, that older, more powerful vampires become masters, and that's capitalized for our listeners, of a community. They take control of a geographical location through the means of subservient vampires and human pawns. Rick doesn't want that kind of power, but he does become a master of Denver. Now, we don't want to give away the whole story, but what's his motivation in doing something like that?
Well, that's all covered in one of the books in the Kitty series, Kitty and the Silver Bullet, which actually depicts the events that lead to Rick becoming the master of Denver. So, you know, people are really interested in learning more about Rick. That's a good one of the books to delve into. And a lot of that is kind of some of the standard lore about vampires that gets covered in a lot of urban fantasy novels. So part of me is playing with that a little bit, playing with the idea of masters and these vampire communities, these vampire families that come mm-hmm. together in cities. And Rick being kind of so, you know, so much of him is playing against the stereotype of vampires that we see in a lot of these books that do seem to be kind of all powerful and ancient and ambitious, and he's just not. So yeah, what happens when somebody like that, who actually really cares about people and cares about doing the right thing and wants to build a community rather than, you know, be the ruler over a group, what happens when somebody like that gets into that position? And it is to protect people, you know, to kind of summarize the whole events without giving too much away. He's, you know, there are some bad people who come to Denver and want to take over. And the way that he decides he can stop them is by, you know, becoming the master of Denver himself to sort of stem the tide.
Mm-hmm. Rick is very pro-human. His character,
yes, yeah.
His character remains constant over the centuries the book covers. He yearns for a connection with a divine. He doesn't like conspiracies and power games. And he actually prefers human friendship over his own kind. However, change is inevitable. Can you tell us a little bit how Rick evolves over the course of his vampire life?
Yeah, I have to think about that for just a minute because he, you know, in some ways he does stay so true to himself, mm-hmm. you know, over the centuries and the decades that he does value friendship and he kind of wants to be left alone. But I think what he finds is, what is the saying about politics? If you don't do politics, politics will be done to you. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could reference that quote. I know it's a pretty famous one, so I'll have to look that up. But he realizes that if he doesn't get involved, then he won't have a choice. You know, there will come a time where he has to either get involved to protect the things that he believes in. And so his arc is kind of reconciling himself to that, like realizing that he does have power and he can use his power for good. And then he has to learn how to do that. And I think that's, that encapsulates his arc, pretty as succinctly as I can in just a couple of sentences.
Mm-hmm. Because at the beginning, which comes back to the end where he's meeting the vampire priest, it does seem like he is now committed to working with others because he's discovered others who also feel like he does.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a really powerful moment for him mm-hmm. as well, is realizing he does have allies. He's not alone.
Well, your other novels have been urban fantasy, the Kitty series. And how was writing this one different?
I don't know that it was. You know, in some ways, everything I write is a little bit different. But in some ways, it's all kind of the same process. And you know, because this is spinning off so much from the Kitty series, it's, you know, a lot of the Rick stories grew out of me just wanting to clarify his backstory so that I could write, you know, I could go back and write the Kitty novels with that information in my mind. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he sort of slowly evolved into his own character with his own arc that I could write more stories about. And the things that they have in common is they're really character driven. You know, the Kitty novels and the Rick stories are pretty steeped in character. And I think urban fantasy in general, you know, so many urban fantasy series and novels, it's the characters that keep us coming back. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you can build a really strong foundation with a character, you can tell just about any kind of story you want to. So for me, yeah, I don't know that it was too terribly different. The biggest difference was the historical aspect, that most of the Rick stories are histories. They're historical fiction, as well as being vampire stories. So there's a lot more research. I had to do a lot of reading, you know, just to kind of get the right atmosphere and to get some of the right details, you know, especially you're writing about Santa Fe in the mid 19th century was really fascinating because we know a lot. There's a lot of information out there, and I want to try to get those details right when I'm writing those stories.
Well, and what are you working on now?
I'm always working on so many things. It's hard to pick one to talk about. I have, in addition to The Immortal Conquistador, I have two novellas coming out this summer about Robin Hood and his children, The Ghost of Sherwood and The Heirs of Locksley. And those will be out starting in June. And then looking a little further out, I've got a couple of different novels that I'm working on. One of them, we still haven't quite settled on the title, but it's kind of a satirical gaming adventure story, and that will be out sometime in the next year, in 2021. And then I'm working on a new novel as we speak that I haven't talked too much about it, but I'm hoping to finish it up in the next couple of months, and then I'll know a little more. But yeah, I'm always working on new things. You know, there's always more stories to tell.
Thanks for dropping in and talking to us today.
No, it's my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to us today on the New Books Network Fantasy and Adventure Channel. I've been talking to Carrie Vaughn about her latest book, The Immortal Conquistador. To find out more about Carrie and all her writing, you can visit her website, carrievaughn.com. In case you're listening and not reading, that's Carrie with a I-E and Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-N. Join us in April when I talk to Karen Landsman about The Heart of the Circle, a contemporary fantasy set in Israel. I'm your host, Gabrielle Matthew, author of the YA fantasy Girl of Fire, the first in the Baroness Quest series. You'll find the podcast schedule on my own website, GabrielleMatthew.com. My name is spelled G-A-B-R-I-E-L-L-E, funny last name coming up, MATHIEU.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter to get updates about new podcasts and more. I'm there at Gabrielle Author.